We'll call this meeting of the Health Human Service Policy and Finance Committee to order. We don't have a quorum, so we'll wait for the approval of minutes. We'll move right into the main event. I see the commissioners here, so we'll start with the presentation from the Department of Health on the Governor's 2005 budget. Welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I am Diane Mandinac. I'm Commissioner of Health for the state of Minnesota. And I have with me at the table this morning Margaret Kelly, who is the Health Department's Director of Fiscal Policy. I also have with me our Assistant Commissioners, Aggie Lighthizer, Carol Wolverton, and Doug Singh, who will be coming up and addressing specific issues as we move through the presentation. What I'd like to do this morning is to provide you with a general overview to our fiscal 2006-2007 budget, and then Margaret Kelly will briefly explain how the budget book is laid out, and then we will walk through the change items. Our fiscal 2006 and 2007 budget is based on priorities that focus on core public health functions at both the state and the community level. The process that we used in putting our budget together included a review of all of our activities as well as agency-wide input to help us focus on our priorities on these activities that are core to public health. When we begin to look at that, what do we mean? We talk about laboratory analysis, we talk about clean water, infectious disease outbreak control, and health emergency preparedness. Budget reductions are always difficult to make. We decided to avoid across-the-board reductions in order to maintain the effectiveness of our programs that we did fund. And we based our decisions on the following principles that would really focus our resources on, or we would decide to focus our resources on activities that are population-based, they're unique to public health and MDH, they're essential to state and local public health. They support the statewide goals of reducing health care costs, improving health care quality, and eliminating health disparities. Before we begin reviewing the specific changes to our budget, I'd like to first refresh your memories on how our budget is funded. We have handed out two graphs, and you may recall seeing these graphs when we did our overview presentation a few weeks ago. The first graph is titled Where Our Funding Comes From, and it shows that almost half, 44%, of our budget is funded with federal funds, and only 16% is funded with state general funds. The core functions of public health activity and the infrastructure of our public health system is funded primarily with these general funds, which makes this funding a high priority in the governor's budget. The second graph is titled Where Our Funding Goes, and it shows that almost two-thirds of our funding, 61%, goes out the door in grants to our public health partners, local units of government, community-based organizations, tribal communities. And I would suggest it is this funding relationship that really is the strength of Minnesota's public health system. I'd like to add, as a note, that detailed information on our grants can be found in the appendix of your budget document starting on page 78. Next, I'd like to have Margaret Kelly talk about how the budget document is put together. Margaret?
Thank you. My name again is Margaret Kelly, and if you look on page one of the document, this is simply an overview from the commissioner to our budget, much of which she has just talked about now. Pages 2, 3, 4, and 5 provide you with some very high-level summary information about how our budget is funded, how our funds are broke down between the appropriation type, whether it's a direct appropriation or something that is appropriated to us by statute, whether it is federal funding or state general fund, whether it goes to our Health Protection Bureau or our Health Promotion Bureau. And on pages 4 and 5, you can get detail about the changes in the governor's budget, the specific change items and where the funding for that is. The change pages themselves start on page 6, and they provide you with background information and rationale for making the changes we are proposing. They provide you with the detail of the cost of each proposal, whether it's just an appropriation that's needed to support the activity or whether there's corresponding fee revenue that will be a part of the proposal. Then moving on to Page 26 begins the narrative description of the activities at the Department of Health. It describes to you the different programs, the organizational structure of our agency, and what functions fall into each bureau within our agency. We're not going to spend a lot of time on this section of the budget. We're going to focus primarily on the change pages in the beginning of the budget. And as the commissioner noted, starting on page 78 is detailed information about our grant programs, both the grants that we give out and who we give them out to, and the grants that we receive from the federal government and the purposes for those grants and the level of funding. So the change pages, the changes we're recommending in this budget fall into one of three categories, where we're either increasing our appropriations to do new activities, we're making reductions or reallocations in our budget, or we are making adjustments to fees. And quite a few of our changes have to do with our fee programs. And so before we begin on the individual change pages, I'd like to give you some general parameters about how our fee programs operate and why we're making the changes that we are. We have 23 separate fee-supported programs at the Department of Health, and we do have a handout that we gave you on our fiscal year 06-07 fee revenues. It's the bar chart, and it lists all the different fee activities we have and the level of revenue that we receive to support those activities. And also indicated on that chart is the changing those items that are being recommended for change in the governor's budget. On the bar chart, you can see the magnitude of the change. We're required by law to set our fees at a level that will fully recover the costs of each activity. And the law also requires you, the legislature, to approve every fee and to set the appropriate level of spending. As we prepare our biennial budget each 2 years, we review every fee program to determine if the revenues are supporting the expenditures and if any changes need to be made, either expenditures or revenues. And so what you have before you is the outcome of this review. There are items where we want to maintain the current level of service, but we need to adjust our spending and our revenue to support it. Costs increase every year to carry out programs, and we either need to curtail our expenditures to operate within our appropriations, or we need to ask for additional appropriations to maintain current services. So some of our fee changes are doing that. Some are where we want to respond to a demand for an increased level of service, and we need to adjust our spending and our revenue to support it. We work very closely with all of our stakeholders who pay the fees to maintain the services we have. And sometimes they want us to do additional things that we can't do within our existing appropriation. And so some of our pages are addressing those issues where fee payers are asking for us to do additional things. We have an item where we have over-recovered our costs in the past, and so we want to adjust our revenues downward so that we maintain a balance between our spending and our revenues. And we also have a few where we have under-recovered our costs, primarily due to subsidizing by other funds, and we need to adjust our revenues and our expenditures accordingly. The law requires that we set the fee to fully support the cost of the program. In a few instances in our fee programs, other funds have subsidized the cost of that program, and so we are suggesting to make adjustments to our fees in a few instances to eliminate that subsidy and to reflect the full cost of the program in the fee. And we'll itemize, as we go through the pages, which fee adjustment falls into which of these categories. The first change item that we want to look at is actually on page 8, so we're a little bit out of sync here, and it's operation support.
This recommendation covers the increased lease costs associated with our new building. The 2002 legislature authorized construction of a new lab and office building for the Departments of Health and Agriculture. At the time, the bonds were authorized, and again in the 2004 capital budget, the Department of Administration estimated an increase in lease rates. This budget addresses how to pay for those increased costs. We will be consolidating staff from our 717 Delaware building on the U of M campus and our Metro Square office building, downtown St. Paul, into the new building and into the Golden Rule office building space downtown. The lease costs will increase by $2.4 million in fiscal year 2006 and $4.8 million in fiscal year 2007. We intend to pay for this increase by reallocating general fund and indirect cost account funds that support administrative and operational activities. And this is going to cover approximately 47% of the increase in fiscal year 07. And then increasing our general fund budget, which will cover 53% of the increase by fiscal year 07. Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering, do you want to handle questions as we go through each of these, or would you rather wait till the end?
Yeah, thanks, Commissioner. We'll take a quick second to do some housekeeping. First of all, Representative Samuelson moves the approval of the Wednesday, February 2nd, 2005 minutes. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion passes. Members, how we'll handle this, I believe, is we'll let the commissioner and assistant commissioners proceed through, and if we do have questions, we'll take them as we go, but we'll... Representative Bradley has assured me that the time for debate will soon be approaching, so we'll stick to questions just to better understand the budget, but we'll save the debate for a later day. So, if there's any questions at this time from any members so far? All right, you can proceed, Commissioner.
Thank you. At this time, Assistant Commissioner Carol Wolverton will come, and she would stand ready as we move through these, as these change items are germane to her area.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Wolverton. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Carol Wolverton.
So the next change item is the Adverse Events Reporting System, and it's on page 6. So we're going back a little bit here. We began implementing the Adverse Events Law in December of 2004, at which time the Minnesota Department of Health began receiving event reports, findings of root cause analysis, and the corrective action plans. In the current biennium, the cost of this activity has been supported by non-state funds, and this was required by the legislation. We are recommending that the license fee for hospitals and outpatient surgical centers be increased to cover the costs of this reporting system. The level of spending will support one FTE at the department and contracts with professional organizations to provide the professional and technical expertise that's needed to review and analyze the reports and the corrective action plans. Mr. Chairman, I would stand for any questions.
Any question, members? See no questions. We can proceed.
The next change item is on page 9, and it's grant reductions. This recommendation includes the general fund budgets for our dental loan repayment program and our suicide prevention grants. MDH has several loan repayment programs. This one, for dentists, is the only one supported with general fund. It provides up to 4 years of student loan repayment at $15,000 a year in fiscal year 05. For approximately 9 licensed dentists per year. This program will be merged with the Health Professional Loan Repayment Program that's funded with the Healthcare Access Funds. The Suicide Prevention Grant Program was enacted by the 2001 legislature to support community-based activities that provide education, outreach, and advocacy to populations who may be at risk for suicide. We will apply for the recently enacted federal funding that would enable us to continue to support a statewide suicide prevention plan. Mr. Chairman, we would stand for questions.
President Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you just tell us more a little bit about the federal funding and when you would expect that to be and why you wouldn't wait for an award of that grant before you cut the funding for that program? Is there going to be a gap?
Commissioner. Ms. Wolverton.
Mr. Chair and Representative Thiessen, the federal funding is the Garrett Smith Memorial Act that was voted through last fall. It is due to come up for RFPs this spring, with money being awarded in September. It will come through SAMHSA. That will be the distributing organization for it. We would probably work very closely with DHS in gathering these monies and working towards getting those dollars because of the SAMHSA background and the history of how they have given grants in the past. But we do tend to go after the dollars and looking at it, hopefully getting it in September.
Representative Kemba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On those same lines, how many grants does the federal government have for this particular issue as far as suicide prevention?
Ms. Wolverton.
Mr. Chair and Representative Otremba, the amount of money that's available through this particular grant process is $10 million, which has been appropriated. All 50 states are eligible to apply for that $10 million. They have not determined at this point, or we have not seen if they have determined at this point, how those are going to be appropriated.
Representative Otremba.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been on the grant review side of it at the federal level, and I think the last time I reviewed, there were, not this particular grant, but another grant, 165 applicants for just a handful of grants. And so I'm a little nervous to say that this is what's going to be there when I know how many more states and agencies are applying for these grants and how more stringent and strict it's been for them to get them. So do you have a backup plan in case we don't get that grant?
Commissioner, Ms. Wolverton.
Mr. Chair and Representative Otremba, we have been told that those grants are going to be limited to one grant per state. So the maximum would be that there would be 50 applicants for this $10 million. Do we have a backup plan for this at this time? Currently, no.
Representative Thiessen.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, just one more quick question. Can you tell me how these grants flow to community agencies? Can you tell me a little bit how it currently operates? And I'm assuming that if this legislation goes through, that would stop as of July 1st. Is there any plan for how, even if we do get the grant, how those folks would survive in that period of time?
Ms. Wolverton.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we're not sure how those grants are going to be funded or passed through the agencies. In the past, as I said, with SAMHSA, the history has been that they release their grant funds via state mental health authorities. That's why I made the comment that we would work very closely with DHS in applying for these grants and getting them. In fact, we have initiated conversations with individuals over there. As far as the gap with our current grantees, not knowing the RFP, and now it is going to be formulated around this particular grant. We do not know if all those grantees would currently be able to be funded with this particular grant or not, if we should happen to receive it. And we do not have any plan to continue funding them past July 1.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Wolverton, the dental loan repayment program, currently is that targeted at dentists that are going into rural areas or underserved areas, or what was the criteria to get those?
Ms. Wolverton.
Mr. Chair and Representative Huntley, the dentist loan forgiveness program, actually it was addressed put into play to address the shortage of dentists that are serving state public program participants. So it provides up to 4 years of student loan repayment at the level of about $15,000 per year for approximately 9 licensed dentists a year. And what they have to do to qualify for that is they have a minimum service obligation of 3 years, and each participant has to deliver service totaling 25% of their yearly patient encounters to state public program and sliding fee scale patients. After the time of that 3-year period, they're not obligated to continue doing that.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Wolverton, so if this was based at, $560,000 per year, I guess, and if I understand this, you're merging that with the other health professional loan repayment programs in the Healthcare Access Fund, but you're not going to increase the dollar amount in those other funds. So we're having a net loss then of $560,000 for all the loan repayment programs, which I guess means there aren't going to be a lot of dentists being encouraged to participate in public programs. Because basically you're eliminating the dental program, because if you merge that in with the physicians and nurse practitioners and so on, there just aren't going to be enough dollars to take care of at least the number of dentists we are doing now. So there will be a significant decrease in dentists treating people on public programs.
Ms. Robertson?
This is a huge issue, to try to find a dentist that will treat people in public programs.
Mr. Chair and Representative Huntley, currently for fiscal year 05, as a point of information, we only had 4 of the 9 available slots filled and requests to fill. Up to this point, we've had 42 participants since the beginning of this in 2002. And for this fiscal year, we've only had 4 applications for this out of the 9 slots available.
Representative McKemba.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was sort of in that line, but I have a second question, and that's, again, on the grants. Can you tell me again, you said that there is a limit to 1 grant per state. Does that mean that there will be many people in a state can apply, but only 1 grant per state will be chosen, or does it mean that only 1 entity in each state can apply?
Ms. Wolverton.
Mr. Chair and Representative Otremba, we have not seen the exact guidelines of how that's going to be requested. What I can tell you is that the distribution of funding is going to go to entities that can provide technical assistance through a center. State tribal grant programs can apply, and college and university grant programs can also apply. So you could have a number of applicants coming from the state from different agencies. That's correct. That would be my assumption.
Thank you.
Any other questions, members? All right. Please proceed.
Thank you. The next change item is on page 10, and it is the Positive Alternatives Program. This recommendation will provide state support for services offered to women facing an unexpected pregnancy. Funding will begin in fiscal year 07 and support a $2.4 million grant program. The intention here is to provide information, referral, or assistance in securing services that assist women in carrying their pregnancy to term. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I would stand for questions.
Any other questions? Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, I'm wondering about who can get these grants. I understand the purpose of the program, but what I don't understand is the bullet that says life-affirming counseling. And does that mean that groups like Lutheran Social Services could not get these grants?
Ms. Wilmington.
Mr. Chair and Representative Huntley, that does not precipitate a group like Lutheran Social Services from applying for these grants. The grants will be formulated for nonprofit organizations who are now already providing services for women throughout their pregnancy. Such things as pregnancy care centers might be applicants, maternity homes might be applicants for this particular grant, for example. So Lutheran Social Services would be able to apply if they wanted to.
Representative Hartley?
Mr. Chair and Ms. Wolverton, could you explain to me what life-affirming counseling means?
Ms. Wolverton.
Mr. Chair and Representative Huntley, life-affirming, we have not particularly defined all of these yet. As we're going through, the language has not been specifically laid out. Life-affirming counseling would could potentially mean things that take them through the entire pregnancy, like helping them with how do I get career counseling, how do I work with family relationships, how do I go about finding childcare and taking care of parenting issues and learning how to parent. Those might be certain examples that fall under life counseling areas.
Representative Huntley?
Well, Mr. Chair, I can't disagree with any of those if that's what the life-affirming counseling means.
I look forward to your support on my bill, then. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And being to the committee, just a clarification for whoever has this. Is this just providing information to people about where to find services, or is this actually money that would provide housing and that kind of thing?
Ms. Wolverton.
Mr. Chair and Representative, it could be either or.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Representative Lachemba.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Did agencies come forward and request this, or is this the governor's initiative?
Ms. Wolverton.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lachemba, it's the governor's initiative.
Any further questions? Seeing none, Commissioner, please proceed.
At this time, I'm going to be joined by Assistant Commissioner Aggie Lighthizer. The next change item is on page 11, and it's the Drinking Water Protection Program. The Drinking Water Protection Program ensures the safety of the public health water supply. The program activities include monitoring and analysis of drinking water, certification and inspection of water supply systems, and the technical assistance to the operators of those systems. The cost of providing these services increases from year to year, and it will exceed the current appropriations and revenues. Since maintaining safe drinking water is a core public health function, we are recommending to increase the spending for this program in order to maintain the current services. In addition to the current services, we are recommending to further increase spending to meet additional federal testing requirements that need to be implemented in fiscal year 07. To recover the cost of these increased expenditures, the water service connection fee will be increased from $5.21 to $6.36. Mr. Chairman, we would stand for questions.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you look at the four-year period, am I right in seeing that there's going to be more revenue coming in than expenditures? If I total up, it's $655. Am I getting those numbers right?
Ms. Lighthizer, excuse me. Did I say that right? Help me out here.
Mr. Chair, my name is Aggie Lighthizer.
Lighthizer, okay. Apologize for that.
That's right.
Proceed with the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. It's often the case when you're collecting a fee that you may collect additional funds the first year so that it balances out over the period of the fee collection. So you may collect more the first year, and gradually the numbers come together. And that's what we're proposing in this fee.
And Mr. Chair, if I can just
call off,
but that coming together isn't shown in this four-year period. Is that it'll come together later on? Is that what, or am I just doing the numbers wrong?
Ms. Lighthizer.
Mr. Chair and Representative, it would come together over, I think it's 5 or 6 years.
Okay. And one other question.
Representative Thiessen.
this is just for public water supplies. This doesn't have anything to do with private private wells and drinking water that people get from, what, is a quarter of the state at least gets their money, water from private wells? This doesn't have anything to do with that?
Ms. Lighthouser.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ethan, that's correct. This is the water that you get through a public connection, and we'll be talking about wells in a little bit.
Thanks.
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Lighthouser, where will the money actually go? I don't see, maybe I missed it, what the FTE count may be in the Department of Health. Is this all Department of Health effort, or is it something that goes to cities, or what's the distribution of the actual money?
Ms. Lighthouser.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bradley, the funding all comes to the department to support all of the safe drinking water activities. It pays for the collection of the samples that's done by state staff. It pays for the testing, the analysis of the information. So it's funding used by the department.
Representative
Chairman, Ms. Lighthouser, what's the FTE then increase, or is this an increase or just paying for current?
Ms. Lighthouser.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bradley, it's the same staffing level. There's not an increase in staffing for this program. It's an increase in the cost over time, and we expect that we will be doing additional testing. The federal requirements are increasing, so we'll be testing for additional chemicals.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions, members? Seeing none, Commissioner, please proceed.
The next change item is on page 13, and it's the Food Manager Certification Program. The Food Manager Certification Program ensures that there is at least one person in each food service establishment that can identify the critical control points in food preparation that prevent foodborne illness and that can train other employees on safe food handling practices. Current fee revenues have not been sufficient to support the program expenditures. In the past, we have reduced spending to keep expenditures and revenues in balance. However, as costs continue to increase, we are not able to maintain timely and effective services without increasing our spending. We are recommending an increase in spending to support current services and responding to increasing demand for certification. The certification fees will increase from $15 to $28 to support program expenditures. Mr. Chairman, we would stand for questions.
Members, any questions? Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, this is an important function. Is there a particular algorithm or anything that was used? I mean, the increase is pretty substantial in terms of percentage at least. And this is the kind of thing where you could almost have infinite activity. What's the logic point of the size of the increase, and what specifically do you get out of that, and what we're doing extra?
Ms. Lighthouser.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bradley, you're correct. One of the challenges that we had in putting this program together was what was an appropriate fee, and as we've been collecting fees starting in July of 2000, our revenues have been below our estimated revenues, and we've had to reduce staff to match the income, which means that it takes longer to process the certificates. And what we're proposing is to be able to manage the request for the certificates in a much more timely fashion so that our revenue actually supports that. And if I may, there's one typo in this page that I'd ask that you correct. Under relationship to base budget, the second paragraph, the last sentence should say the increase to $28. It currently says 18.
Any further questions? See no questions. Commissioner, please proceed.
Thank you. The next change item is on page 14. It's the Food, Beverage, and Lodging Program. Minnesota Department of Health licenses and inspects food, beverage, and lodging facilities in 47 counties to identify and reduce risk factors found to cause foodborne illness. And we are recommending several changes to this program. First, we've adopted a new federal inspection model that focuses on reducing risk factors and consulting on food security issues. rather than monitoring compliance with a set of standards. This model is more effective at reducing foodborne illness, but it's also more time-consuming. In order to maintain our current inspection frequency, we will need to hire additional staff. And we're recommending increasing the license fee to support this increased expenditure. The second part, federal law is now requiring 2 inspections of school kitchens per year instead of 1. To meet this higher service level, we will need to hire additional staff. We're recommending a new fee category for schools to support this additional expenditure. And third, the federal preventative block grant funding has subsidized the statewide oversight of this program. And this block grant funding was at risk of being eliminated in the most recently enacted federal budget. We're recommending that the fee fully cover the costs of this component of our program. We are also recommending that we increase our capacity to provide technical assistance, trend analysis, and communication to all licensed establishments in the state. We are proposing that each establishment in the state be assessed a statewide hospitality fee of $35 to support the cost of MDH oversight responsibilities. Mr. Chairman, we would stand for questions.
Members, any questions? Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chairman, may we just use this as an example since there's a substantial amount of increase and the dollar amount's fairly significant also. I understand sort of what it's directed to, but does all of the increase and all of the base money go to this, or do we allocate some parts of these increases to cover overheads, other levels of staff, that kind of thing? I know on some of our federal grants that we get, we sort of tax them to cover some of those expenses. What do we do here? Do we tax any of these in any kind of way?
Commissioner or Ms. Kelly, right?
Yes. Mr. Chair and Representative Bradley, the law requires that we set a fee at a level to recover both our direct and indirect costs. And so we have an agreement with the federal government that the indirect cost rate for the agency is 19.4%. So we include that amount of indirect support in each of our fee programs as required by law.
So, Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Gardner, if I understand, and I hope I just play it back as I hear then, in the additional $1.5 million per year, about 19% of that would be allocated to cover sort of the indirect expense. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bradley, I'm not sure that's the correct amount. Our rate is assessed against expenditures, but I'm not sure it would be correct to say that 19.4% of the $1.5 million is for indirect. We could get you that exact
would
amount.
Would you please? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Samuelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Ms. Kelly, is it?
Yes.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about the federal, apparently it's a mandate and not just a recommendation that the inspection is twice a year in schools. And basically what my question is there a real need for that in Minnesota, or is it something that we could get a waiver on because there is a cost impact?
Ms. Kelly.
I'm going to defer.
You're making this tough on me here. Ms. Lighthouser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. It's my understanding that the requirement from the federal level is something that they're applying across the country. In Minnesota, we continue to see foodborne outbreaks in schools, and as is true for the restaurant inspection program that we work with the food preparers and the food managers about food safety practices, we use the inspections as an opportunity to both inspect but also to educate and inform. And I think it is an opportunity for schools to increase their food safety practices.
Are there issues in the schools in Minnesota that they would need to increase the survey or whatever to twice a year instead of one?
Ms. Lighthouser.
Mr. Chair and Representative Samuelson, we see concerns about, as is true in many food establishments, we see issues about
temperature management of food, hand washing issues, training of staff as they come in. Sometimes they have temporary workers that come to schools, food practices such as use of cutting boards appropriately. We continually see issues and the inspections are an opportunity to improve that. So I would say yes, we are seeing food safety issues in school.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Kelly, I guess. I'm just interested in the relationship between the Department of Aggies. the relationship between the Department of Health and some counties or cities do these inspections, and how does that work out?
Ms. Lighthouser.
Mr. Chair and Representative Huntley, there are a number of counties that have that do their own food, beverage, and lodging program under a delegation agreement from the Department of Health. We provide oversight, assistance, training, support for them if they are overwhelmed or it's an area outside their expertise. So we do it in concert. Some of the counties and cities have very well-developed and well-established programs. Others are interested in looking at that issue. And one of our concerns is providing consistent oversight for them.
Representative McCumber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does the school hot lunch program, are they required to be trained also?
Ms. Lighthouser.
To the restaurant owners?
Mr. Chair and Representative Tremba, yes, they're required to have the food manager certification that we talked about in the previous request.
In my experience with food, it's usually a training issue and not necessarily an inspection issue. So when foodborne illnesses are out and about, a lot of times it is the preparation, the training part, and not necessarily. And I would think that the training part would be cheaper than the inspection part.
Ms. Lighthouser?
Mr. Chair and Representative Tremba, I would agree, but I guess I would add a little bit that sometimes they go hand in hand. Sometimes what we see is that the setup and arrangement for hand washing in the kitchen is not everything that it should be. And so you need both education and you need to look at location and staffing issues. So I think it's a joint effort.
Mr. Chair, I agree that it's a joint effort, but you know, schools are in session 9 months out of the year and two inspections. It looks like it's going to be extremely expensive for the schools, and I realize that the federal government is requiring this, but in one inspection you should be able to catch those types of things. And when the inspector isn't there, it has to follow through with training. And so I agree that there needs to be some inspections, but I'm not sure that two inspections really gets at the root of foodborne illnesses.
Ms. Lighthouser?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Tremba, just to clarify, the amount of funds for the school doubling the inspection is $175,000 a year. And you're right, this is a requirement of the federal program for the school food lunch program, so our flexibility is somewhat limited on this one.
Right. And Mr. Chair, most food programs are on the edge in the schools already and many times in the red.
Representative Weber.
Thanks. Just the school deal is interesting to me. Have you talked to the School Board Association about this, either one of you, so that they can know this is coming down? And is there a, you know, I've been trying to help with your image over the last 50 years here, and maybe there's a, like the full meal deal and the light inspection deal where you could kind of do the major inspection, which they expect, and then kind of the little follow-up to meet the minimum criteria for the feds. Because especially, and you would spend more attention where you found a positive finding on the first time through. And then the second one would be kind of a check-off. Maybe there'd be an inspection, but it'd be a matter of having lunch there one day and look how it seems. And just the thought as you go forward with this, the schools are really in hard times, whether it be the lunch programs, which are running at a loss in most cases. It's been flat funding for a good long time. So just to echo that, and if you want to respond, you can.
Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, we could certainly pass the concern of the committee on to Congress, because this is in response to the Richard B. Russell National School Lunch Act that Congress enacted that required. This is not just an agency change.
Mr. Chair, just a
representative Abler.
I'll be short, but so does it specify what each inspection shall consist of, or does it give you flexibility just to inspect them twice?
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, I think we'll get back to you with specifics about that. I would imagine that there's some requirements that we must meet, but I don't know exactly what they are.
Thanks.
Representative Goodman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It says here that the fees for schools will double. What are they now and what will they be?
Ms. Lighthizer.
Mr. Chair and Representative, the current school fee is $175,000 and they will double for another $175,000.
Well, Mr.
Representative
Chair,
Goodman.
I'm talking more per school.
Per school?
Per district.
Ms. Lighthizer.
Master Chair, and Representative. I don't have those numbers in front of me, but we could get those to you, mm-hmm. what the school amount would be by school. I'm not sure if it's based on size.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Seeing none, Commissioner, please proceed.
Thank you. The next change item is on page 16, and it's our lab certification program. Our environmental lab certification program ensures that public and private labs that perform testing for certain state and federal programs meet the federal specifications. The cost of providing the service is increasing, and it exceeds the fee revenue. We are recommending increasing spending to maintain current services. In addition, the laboratory community is requesting additional services in the areas of training and technical assistance. We are recommending two additional FTEs to respond to this demand for service. The certification fees will be increased to fully recover the additional expenses. Mr. Chairman, we stand for questions.
Any question, members? Seeing none, Commissioner? Representative Goodman.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. On these additional fees, are those going all to the service, or are those going, is any part of that going to the general fund?
Ms. Lighthizer.
Mr. Chair and Representative Goodwin, the fees support the activities of the program, so they don't go to the general fund. I'm not sure I'm answering the question.
Goodwin. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm asking these additional fees, any money from these additional fees or current fees in your department period are going to the general fund.
Ms. Lighthizer.
Mr. Chair and Representative Goodwin, no.
Thank you.
See no further questions, Commissioner. Please proceed.
The next change item is on page 17. It's for meth lab remediation. Meth is a problem for almost every community. It affects local and state budgets for law enforcement, criminal justice, public health, and children's services. The governor is proposing a major meth initiative that will provide resources for public safety, restrict access to the drugs used to cook meth, and create a revolving loan fund to give local governments the resources they need to clean up the meth labs. One requirement of the revolving loan fund is that the Minnesota Department of Health remediation guidance be applied to all cleanups of properties contaminated by meth labs. This recommendation supports one additional FTE at the department to provide technical assistance to local units of government as they develop programs to remediate former meth lab sites. Mr. Chairman, we would stand for questions.
Representative Walker.
Mr. Chair, since this is a revolving loan program, is this going to be an interest-based loan? How is the cost back to the local government going to be?
Ms. Lighthizer.
Mr. Chair and Representative, this is not the part of the meth proposal that's about the revolving loan fund. This is to support a position at the Minnesota Department of Health to help with the cleanup guidance.
Mr. Chair,
that'll be coming to another proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the amount that is scheduled. So the $100,000 that you're proposing includes the FTE that you're talking about and the things that just solely around that.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Walker, that's correct. It's support the additional assistance to counties so that they are clear and are trained and up to date on the most current cleanup guidance.
Okay.
Representative Tremba.
Mr. Chair, is there an application already?
Yes.
comment to that, or?
Mr. Chair, we'll see where things are at in May.
Okay. Any other questions? Seeing none, Commissioner, please proceed.
The next change item is on page 19, and it's the plumbing program. We are recommending two adjustments to this fee program. First, when we established new fees for this program during the 2003 session, we included an option for accelerated plan review that provides for a review within 15 business days of receipt of the plan. And this was an unexpectedly popular option in 2004. We are recommending adding staff to meet the demand for this service. Current fee revenues would support this additional spending. And second, we need to make a correction of fees that were established for certain types of plumbing system components called catch basins. The current fee structure is based on the total number of these features in a plan submission. It should be based on the number of unique designs. As a consequence, fees collected for some projects exceed the cost of providing the plan review. We are recommending reducing this particular fee. Mr. Chairman, we would stand for questions.
Members, any questions? Seeing none, Commissioner, please proceed.
The next change item is on page 20. It's our well management program. The Minnesota Department of Health's well management program has been very effective at ensuring safe drinking water by monitoring the construction of new wells and properly sealing abandoned wells. The cost of providing these services has increased. In addition, consumer requests for information and assistance have increased. We are recommending that spending increase to maintain the current level of service. In addition, fees will be increased to support the higher level of expenditure. Mr. Chairman, we would stand for questions.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just more of a general information question. This has to do with kind of well siting and sealing. Who in the state has responsibility for monitoring groundwater that's not related to the public systems?
Ms. Lighthizer.
Mr. Chair and Representative, the Department of Health has a lot of responsibility in helping ensure the quality of drinking water and groundwater through the work that we're doing on the well programs because of the ability to contaminate groundwater through the wells. The monitoring of groundwater is a multi-state responsibility. We share that to some extent with the Department of Natural Resources and with pollution control. So it's a joint effort, and we have a variety of monitoring activities and events that we do jointly.
And just one follow-up. How much money is allocated in this budget? I'm assuming there's no change to it because it's not changing. How much money is allocated to groundwater monitoring in the Department of Health?
Ms. Lighthizer.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I'll need to get back to you with that number. I don't have the breakout.
Okay, and if, Mr. Chair, when you do that, if we could get a sense of how that has been kind of historically over the last decade, too.
Okay.
Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is more of a general question about the fees generally. There's lots of fees in all of these different programs that are increasing. Do you have the total amount of fee increases for all the programs combined?
Ms. Kelly.
If you turn to page 4 in your budget document, about midway down the page where it says the State Government Special Revenue Fund, that is the fund out of which all of our fee programs operate, and you can see the change items there. I would have to do the math. I haven't done that. I probably have that here as well.
Representative Eakin, do you have a follow-up?
Well, I guess I was the second one's kind of based on the first one, but any, I guess, ballpark figure as far as what the increases are probably? No?
Ms. Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the question is the dollar amount of the increase or the percentage increase?
Dollar amount.
Mm-hmm. Michelle might have the answer here, Representative Eakin.
So, Michelle. Calculator members, I for 06, I calculate $4.2 million approximately.
Okay.
And it looks like it would carry the same amount into 07, maybe a slight increase from that.
Okay.
But you can see for the midway down the page, it's $32,081,000, and then after the governor's recommendations, and this is special revenue, state government special revenue only, it turns to be $36.3 million, so the difference is $4.2 million.
Okay.
Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the other question, I was wondering what's happened to the total amount of funding for all these programs combined. Is there any increase or is there a decrease? What's happening to the total amount of funding for all these programs?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the information that Ms. Schill gave reflects the change in the total funding for all of the fee programs, that our funding for these programs is going up by $4.2 million in 06 and $4.6 million in 07. Does that answer your question?
But is it a total budget cut for the department that you're experiencing? I mean, for all these programs combined, is there an increase?
Mr. Chair and Representative, it's roughly about a 2% increase in our overall budget, and that reflects all funds, general fund, state government special revenue, fee revenues, federal funds as well.
Okay.
The changes within each fund varies. There's a small change in the general fund. I believe it's a small increase, and there's a decrease in federal funds, but overall it's a 2% increase in our budget.
Any further questions, members? Representative Chimba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As long as you're at the table, can you tell me how many FTEs you've added in the department?
Ms. Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Trumbo, overall our FTE count in fiscal year 05 is 1,351 FTEs, and with the governor's recommendation, we'll increase that to 1,358 FTEs in 06 and only 1,354 FTEs in fiscal year 07. So it's just an increase between 3 and 7 FTEs, and that's all funds, and that includes our federal funding.
Representative Trim, that's on page 3 in your handout. So, Representative Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is another question on the budget. I don't see in your budget anywhere in your line items your expenditures for professional technical consultants. Can you tell me what that is for this biennium and what it's projected to be for next biennium?
Ms. Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Goodwin, I don't have that on hand. I can provide that with you. I also believe that the Department of Finance was preparing a report by agency with that information.
Representative Goodwin.
Well, Mr. Chair, I do have that information from the Department of Finance, and it appears that it's close to $22 million for this biennium. For the current biennium, it's $21,991,000, and for the next biennium, it's projected to be a very small decrease, a $200,000 decrease, so it'll still be $21,767. The problem is that by statute, that's supposed to be in the line items of the budget, and it's supposed to have been there since 1998. So I believe that the departments are out of compliance with state law, as is the Department of Finance, for not preparing budgets with that amount in it. It's impossible to really judge just by looking at FTEs what the department has been doing. Nobody gets this document except for the chairs of the Ways and Means Committees unless they ask for it. So I want to relay that message that the department, we should be able to see that by function within your department so we know whether those numbers are going up or down. Those are every bit, if not more important, than the number of FTEs, because that's the only way you get a full picture of what the funding is, how it's changing in the department. That money is basically offline, and it should be online. So as legislators look at the budgets. They can tell what the full impact is of your budget. So I would like that information for each of these departments split out. That is not the way the Department of Finance prepares it, but I would like that from you on each function within your agency, the current biennium and the next biennium. And I would really like the departments to start complying with the law and putting that in the budget pages that we have before us.
Commissioner Miscelli has more of a comment, but do you have a...
We'll provide that information.
All right. Mr. Chair,
I think it's a fair request. However, the dollars are not off mine. We see the dollars in these budgets. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Ms. Kelly.
Thank you.
Right, but Mr. Chair, Representative Bradley, we have no idea where those dollars are in the budget.
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Goodman, I want to be sure you understand that the dollars are not offline someplace where we don't see them. You're correct in that we don't have a breakdown of those, the proportion. That's fair. I just want to make sure there's no misunderstanding.
All right, we're all on the same page. Let's continue, Commissioner.
Thank you. And I'm going to be joined by Assistant Commissioner Doug Singh.
Mr. Singh, nice to see you up so early.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 11:20.
Respect.
That comment. The next change item is on page 22. And it's the Office of Complementary and Alternative Practice. This office was established in 2001 to investigate complaints and take enforcement actions against unlicensed complementary and alternative health care practitioners. Since that time, we have received an estimated 63 complaints against an estimated 3,000 practitioners. We will discontinue the functions of this office and rely on existing methods of recourse for civil and criminal complaints. Mr. Chairman, we stand for questions.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, this has nothing to do with the non-nurse midwives.
Mr. Singh?
Mr. Chair, Doug Stang, Department of Health. No, this is separate from that.
So,
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and one of the two commissioners there, what's the alternative then for these people? That could you just sort of describe if they still have a complaint against one of these individuals? How is that going to be addressed?
Mr. Singh.
Mr. Chair, Representative Huntley, maybe a little more background would be helpful. Of the 63 complaints that we received, about a third of them are sexual misconduct complaints. We believe those complaints could be followed appropriately through the criminal side, as well as the second most common complaint is harm to public or client, which the most often offense within that category is fraud. So the two most frequent violations or complaints that we receive could be pursued criminally against those providers, as well as the patient would have the option of seeking civil damages as well.
Representative Abler.
Thank you. Two things. One is the licensed traditional midwives are under the Board of Medical Practices and Advisory Council, and they're under the scrutiny of that group, so there's a lot of protections built into that. I happen to work on that in 1999, that's why I know. I'm concerned about this action, and I think you can minimize this only 63 out of 3,000. Having done a lot of work with licensing boards, we have come to expect a great deal of our professional cadre of professionals. One thing this legislation accomplished, I wasn't a chief author, but I remember being involved with, and this is a lot of debate about it, was to decriminalize the behavior of these individuals and not make it the practice of medicine for which they'd be, gave them the freedom to do some things as long as they disclosed the number of things that they would, that they weren't credentialed for and would cause no harm. I think that we kind of led the country, I think, in some of that, and in good and bad ways, depending on who was testifying at the time. But nonetheless, I think by a wide margin, we as a legislature agreed and the governor signed the bill authorizing this practice. For one thing, I think there's a great deal of promise in future health outcomes to be found in this cadre of people of varying values, some minimal, some extremely good potential, at least emerging ideas that may someday become the cutting edge. But in the meantime, when a person sees one of these practitioners, they're going to be under the impression we've legalized their activities. And what happens in a board, whether it be a midwife or one of my profession or any profession, if they have a sexual misconduct complaint, there might be a dual action against them. The leverage that a board has against a license and a licensee is incredibly powerful. Every time I get a letter from my board saying a new privacy news, I'm like, what's going to happen to me today? I'm always afraid what it's... I shouldn't tell my board that, but you're always wondering, like when the tax IRS sends a letter and like, happy birthday, you're like, you know, you don't know what's in there. And so there's a great deal of, amongst the people who are regulated by these boards, who are no-nonsense about scrutinizing people that are doing bad things, that it creates a certain level of professionalism. Even though this small department at the Department of Health doesn't have that credential and standing, it has the proxy to do that. And in the authorities they had the right to remove their right under the act. They could, in fact, criminalize their behavior if they continued to act without the credential of the law we passed allowing them to do this act. Does that make sense? Because the term is practicing medicine without a license, and there's a penalty for that. And then if they would continue on, they would have some cease and desist activity. But right now, in the eyes of a regular consumer, where do they go? They go to their county attorney now, and that's a maze. If you're going to file fraud charges, you have to get a lawyer, and it's, you know, I'm supposed to know this business, but I wouldn't know where to set the county attorney's office. I wouldn't know what desk to go to. And so what's going to happen is these 63 complaints, I'm concerned, are going to go lacking for enforcement and for at least easy enforcement. And so I was aware of this, and I'm glad I was here for this part of the discussion, because I'm concerned that even though this is it seems like a minor, it's pocket change in terms of the money. It's not going to balance anybody's budget. But I urge the department to reconsider their thought about this and see if, indeed, even though it's a small amount of work, if you want to shrink the department to one person or at least have a place to, you know, an avenue of a window to go to so they can, how to access the county attorneys. Maybe they would offload all the sexual complaints right to a county attorney. That'd be fine. But I think the Department of Health, which is taking on the mantle of being the health regulating entity, in particular this health stuff, and we've talked in the past about other things that you've been less popular for, but this is, I think, the key role of the Department of Health. And I think it would continue your good image to continue with this, so I appreciate that.
All right, members, just quickly, and not to be rude, but I'm going to be rude.
I'm all done for the day.
Okay. All right. Well, let's stick to the questions that we have in regards to the information in front of us and save the debate. I know there's a fine line, but the time will be soon enough. So, Mr. Singh, Commissioner, proceed.
The next change item is on page 23. It's the occupational therapy program. One of the health occupations we license is occupational therapist. In the past, our license fees were set at a level which over-collected revenues. We are proposing to continue the fee holiday that was enacted 2 years ago to bring overall revenue collections in line with the expenditures. Mr. Chairman, we would stand for questions.
Any questions? Seeing none, Commissioner, please proceed.
The next change item is on page 24, and it's the vital records program. The Office of the State Registrar is responsible for maintaining the state's vital record system and coordinating the work of over 100 local registrars in 87 counties. We are proposing several changes to the funding for this activity. 5 years ago, we implemented a centralized electronic system which allows a birth or death certificate to be obtained from anywhere in the state, not just the county in which a birth or death occurred. With this new system, the work of the office has changed. We have new costs associated with supporting a statewide computer system. In addition to maintaining the system, we need to plan for the next major upgrade to the system, which is scheduled for the next biennium. We also have new policies and procedures to address identity fraud issues, and we have centralized some record maintenance functions. In addition to increased costs, this activity has been supported or subsidized with non-revenue fee. Some of the subsidization has been long-term. Some has been more recent to address the cost pressures we just talked about. The first change we are recommending is to increase the level expenditure for this program to maintain our current service level. and to implement an upgrade to the electronic record system in the next biennium. The second change we are recommending is to increase the level of spending from the state government special revenue fund in order to eliminate the subsidies that have supported this program. With regard to fees, we are recommending that the vital records surcharge be increased to support the cost of the electronic record system. We are also recommending that the base fee for a certified copy of a vital record be increased to support the operations of the office and the operations of the local registrar's office. Mr. Chairman, we would stand for questions.
Members, any questions? Seeing none, Commissioner, please proceed.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, that is our budget presentation.
Any closing questions or comments? More questions than comments? Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If the committee will bear with me, I had to sneak away for a moment. I have just a couple questions. One being with the, if you find it, the health disparity grants and the great work that Gloria Lewis and other staff are doing as it relates to eliminating the disparities with communities of color throughout the state. I'm curious in knowing where the department is, has the department started planning for when the dollars are gone as it relates to the diabetes department within the department and cardiovascular disease, individuals that are working on this as an everyday function throughout, you know, focus on all of the populations, but now that we have these health disparities, we have a team focused on communities of color. I want to know what the transition will be once the dollars are gone, going back to doing the work within the department itself.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I can't answer that we have a transition plan. Certainly what we have done in this particular budget as we have put this together, that was a program that we feel very strongly about preserving. Mm-hmm. We made a conscious effort that we were not going to consider that for any reductions at all. We are very, very pleased and committed to continue down that path. As to what the actual transition or how that would accomplish, I can't answer that today.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Along that point, I'm hoping the department starts to think about that. The dollars aren't going to be there forever. And it, I think it's something very important. We still have a long way to go as it relates to disparities in health with communities of color. And it's something that is very important, trying to figure out what that transition is going to be. Mr. Chair, I actually have a different area of question. Going to the family planning special project, I'm just curious. There were 15 different organizations that did not receive family planning dollars. I'm not familiar with the rating process and the score. Can I get some information about that?
I'm going to ask Assistant Commissioner Carol Wolverton to come in. She is familiar with the scoring of those grants.
Thank you.
Ms. Wolverton.
Mr. Chair and Representative Walker, to clarify, you're interested in just understanding how the scoring process takes place? Is
that's
that
right there.
Okay, thank you. In the Family Planning Special Project grants, there is an application process that goes out to designated individuals with certain types of backgrounds that can apply to be reviewers of the grants that come in. Those individuals are chosen. They go through an orientation and training process on the scoring and the different areas that each grant is scored. And then at that point in time, they split into teams, each team taking about five particular grants that they review and score. I don't have exactly all the scoring areas, but I would be happy to send you that copy so you can see what they're all scored on.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be interested in that. I'd be interested in knowing what information went out to different partners as it relates to information about this, the opportunity to sit on some type of panel of that nature, because I've never seen anything of that nature. I'm also interested in knowing the makeup of the individuals that did participate in the last cycle. I'm looking at, you know, I realize that there has to be a cut somewhere, but it's kind of disturbing when there's four specific organizations of color in all four areas that didn't receive a dollar, and I know they're doing terrific work in trying to prevent pregnancy, do overall family planning, and doing some cultural specific work. Lastly, I'm interested in the department knowing, since we're looking at having the governor's new initiative in funding for community alternative type programming, what's the thought as it relates to the bottom line in securing funding in the future for these organizations that did not get the benefit in this last cycle?
Commissioner, Ms. Wolverton.
Mr. Chair and Representative Walker, there is no initiative at this time to secure funding for those that were not funded on the last grant cycle, other than the fact that they can apply again when the next cycle comes forward.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker.
I'll just close with, if you can get me that information before we start moving forward, specifically since we're going to have a committee doing dialogue before I speak out of turn, because I do have a whole lot of comments that I could say. I'd appreciate that.
I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you.
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a comment to the Health Department. I just wanted to make some announcements to the committee, so I just want to make sure we close on the Health Department first.
Any further questions for the Health Department? Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, on this sheet there was listed bioterrorism grants of $22 million, and is that covered in pages 59 to 61?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Huntley, I will ask Margaret Kelly where it's located. Yes.
Okay. If
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, if you could get me a just sort of an update on what's going on in the bioterrorism area, I'd appreciate it. It doesn't have to be today or anything. But
Commissioner.
I have a particular interest in that area.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Huntley, are you looking for monies or are you looking for program and activities, a report on activities?
More program and activities. Where are the grants going? What are they used for? That sort of thing.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Huntley, we will get that to you.
Further questions? Representative Thiessen.
Just one general information question, Mr. Chair. How do you determine what's a change item? And anybody can answer that if someone else knows.
I'm going to have to get the expert and then I'll see if I'm right.
Ms. Kelly.
And just the reason I ask is that when I look at some of the later budget activity summaries, I see general fund appropriations and total appropriations going down for other programs that weren't covered in the change item sections, like the grants, the multicultural stuff that Representative Walker was just talking about.
Ms. Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, if you turn to page 4 of our budget document, that walks through fund by fund where we start off, what is our base budget, and then a change item is, before I say that, it walks what is our base budget, what technical adjustments we are making to our base budget. So the very first line, the Environmental and Natural Resource Fund, our base budget is $132,000. We're making a technical adjustment of $132,000 reduction since those appropriations were one time. And so our governor's recommendation in funding out of the Environmental and Natural Resource Fund is zero. If you go down to the general fund, you see that same base appropriation of $61 million in technical adjustments to bring us to a starting point, a forecast base of $64 million. The changes are ups, increases and decreases to our budget that the governor is recommending off of our base budget. So the health disparity grants that Representative Walker referred to are incorporated in that base budget. And since we're not making changes to that grant program, it's not identified as.
So it's just a matter of the forecast changing the number. In the budget forecast, if there's a reduction because they think something's not going to happen, then that's why it's a lower number, but it's not necessarily a technical change item.
Ms. Kelly.
Ms. Chair, Representative Thiessen, the change items are changes that we are proposing to our budget that are not reflected in the forecast.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Bradley, comment to that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, let me see if because another way that I put it oftentimes is that change items are changes off current law. And current law can go up and down in budgets depending upon what current law does. And the change is off that current law.
No, thank you.
Representative Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to go back to this community and family health promotion, this positive alternatives program, for just a second, and the criteria for obtaining those grants. Do you have a well-defined, set of criteria? Or I see what your purpose is, but would that in any way eliminate adoption agencies like Lutheran Social Services and perhaps Children's Home Society? Would they be denied these funds because they are not sufficiently life-affirming?
Representative Hartley, would you like to answer this? This is what I said.
Mr. Chair and Representative Goodwin, no, they will not be eliminated. By life-affirming, a couple examples of life-affirming type counseling would be assisting with learning parenting techniques or working on employment and occupational type things. That's what we're looking at under life-affirming. So Lutheran Social Services would definitely qualify as someone who could apply for these dollars.
Representative Goodwin.
Mr. Chair, where did these dollars come from? I see they're new dollars, but what part of your budget did you change or whatever? Did you just increase the expenditures for this?
Margaret.
Ms. Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Goodwin, I don't think the increase for this grant program could be tied to any specific reductions. Those decisions were made at the Department of Finance in terms of how the overall governor's budget would be put together. There are reductions, there are increases. I don't know if we can specifically say one is tied to the other.
Representative Goodwin?
One final question. I'm concerned about the governor's recommendation to reduce health care for people, single adults and so forth, at the same time that we are promoting new social service expenditures in this area. So are we pitting one group of people's health care needs against another's here and saying, okay, we're going to focus more in this area and say that people that are currently on Minnesota Care or GAMC or some other program aren't as deserving as this?
Representative Goodwin, I think that's maybe more of a question for the debate in the weeks to come. I don't know if the department can really answer that at this point, but definitely save that question. And as we debate the bill in the next coming weeks, we can definitely talk about that.
Thank you.
Representative Tremba.
Well, I was going to talk a little bit about the family grant project. And I think this has been a consistent problem with minorities and lower income applicants around the state. Having sat on the selection team, I found that even in our training, we were told that the ultimate decision is made by the commissioner. And so in looking through the law, I do think we need to take a look at that. There are training, but it seems that the little grants that are maybe even more important get a lower score. And I remember even when I was on the review team, where scores were erased and changed so someone could get it and someone then lost. So I think we do need to look at this a little closer.
Any further questions for the department?
Mr. Chairman, if I could respond.
Commissioner,
to that.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Otremba, one of my key priorities since I have been here is to work toward the elimination of the disparities that exist between and among our communities in the state of Minnesota. I have not changed that priority. It remains one of the top things that I'm committed to. And I think that we will, that we have changed our organizational chart to reflect the importance of that in our organization.
So you, I pledge to you my commitment to continue to work on this effort.
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And while Ms. Kelly is there, I just want to bring to the members' attention, we didn't go through in detail from page 59 on. We saw the change pages, which is appropriate to focus on from the committee's point of view. However, I think members in your packet will see that pretty much the rest of the health department budget is shown, including, by the way, in the last part of it, I believe starting about 78, the federal funds. As far as I'm concerned, members, I mean, I think that there's been some concern some places about not having scrutiny on those. Well, here there is scrutiny, and we have every opportunity to look over those. If there are questions on any of those areas for individual members, to go to the department to bring those to the attention of the committee, if you wish. Sort of my overall philosophy on the budget is that given all kinds of consideration, at least the framework that's being presented to us in the health and human services area is probably where we're going to have to live within, and that means it doesn't mean, however, that we wouldn't welcome ideas. And if people have some thoughts and ideas of other priorities, of things that maybe we can find, some efficiency, some other kind of place that might give us the leverage to do something a little different, this committee should certainly be open to, and I'm certainly open to, but that means some work. But I just want to point out that you do have other information. We're not restricted in what we do with this committee to only those topics that are brought forward by the change pages.
Representative Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I noticed that the governor recommends to cut all the funding in the suicide prevention program. And I was attending your meeting that you had a few years ago, and I know that Minnesota has suicide as the second leading cause of death for 10 to 24-year-olds, and it's third nationally, so we're higher than average. And I'm wondering why, what the rationale is for cutting that program and putting the money. I'm concerned that we're trying to do too many things and not do any of them well. And so we're taking money out of that program and putting it into this other brand new program that I just talked about. What's the rationale for that?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Goodwin, when we have presented that change page, one of the things we talked about is that there is a federal initiative that is coming down. We are going to apply for those grants. At the same time that is going on, there is, we are partnering and at the table with the Department of Human Services on a major mental health initiative. And the Department of Health's role in that is to focus on prevention so that we can begin to determine early and intervene early so that hopefully we don't get to that point. So it was a program that we felt that while it is general fund at this point, there is an opportunity to recover some monies through a federal program.
Thank you.
Any further questions for the department? Okay. Representative Bradley, do you have any housekeeping?
Oh, housekeeping, yes. Yeah, I'm sorry, but we can excuse.
Yes. Thank you very much for the great presentation. Thanks for being here today. Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I want to be sure to bring something to your attention. We are a policy finance committee, and ordinarily, from a policy point of view, we'd be hearing bills. Frankly, there hasn't been a lot of bills in. And well, I know you can. I'm saying this with some trepidation. So, Representative Abel, if you would simply not pay attention to what I'm about to say. But my suggestion to members is we are about almost exactly 2 months away from first committee deadline. And I can tell you for committee administrators that in the last 2 weeks it gets frantic. People are desperate. They want to have their bills heard, and there's only so much time. And I'm not about to expand a lot of additional hours so we can do that. I would simply suggest to members, and I'm not saying we have to. I mean, if we don't have bills, we don't need to create them. But if you do have some initiative that you want to be considered in this committee, you ought to be getting those bills in pretty soon, because 2 months will tick by in a hurry. So just a thought. And Representative Abel, now you can start listening again.
All right, members, seeing no further comments or questions. Next meeting will be Tuesday, February 8th, 10:15 a.m. This meeting is now adjourned.